Well, hey, don't record until. Well, now you're doing it.
How to get my consent first.
Yeah.
Wait, do you beep? Do you just bleep people? I guess you could do that if you wanted to. I don't monetize. I can't even monetize. I only have 300 subscribers.
No, no, well, less, no. Beep, less than like, no, like, I mean, beeping, like beep, you know, curse beep. That kind
nah.
Of
thing. I don't want to do that. I hate that.
For sure. But that you don't. As long as you're not posting it, because YouTube has a thing where you do have to, like, COPPA caught up with them. So you got to say, like, not for kids. And kids can still find it, but it's a box to check, you know.
Yeah. I just drive around to, like, the local schools and just, like, you know, scream out my link.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, how I get views.
That's grassroots promotion right there.
Yep. You know? Selling the podcast out of my trunk. Yeah.
Standing in line at Warped Tour handing out recordings.
Oof.
Yeah, you know what's up.
The trunk at 7-Eleven with all the CDs and sleeves.
Yeah.
I got hit up on one of those like a couple months back, and it took me back to the early aughts. I haven't had that because living up in LA, that's, you have that every other block basically. You go to a liquor store, you go to whatever store, you get a guy trying to sell you CDs or shoving a CD in your hand, and then when it touches your hand, you owe them $5. Mm-hmm. So it happened over in El Cajon like a couple months back, and I didn't take it, but I felt warm inside because it felt like home.
Yeah, that's still going on up here.
Yeah,
I got. I'm pretty sure there's some dude around the corner from my house right now doing it. Oh no, it's raining. It's probably not out there. Right.
Oh, Hollywood, I got it recently.
Hollywood
too.
Is ridiculous, man.
Hollywood, ridiculous. Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard, like, because I lived over there. Sunset Boulevard was like. Yeah. All the time there.
Yeah, there in Times Square are the two places I've experienced the craziest. Like, you literally have to keep your hands in your pocket, otherwise you're getting a CD in your hand. Like, still nowadays too, you know, it's just, that's what it is.
I was in what was it, New Orleans? Yeah, we were out there for Mardi Gras, and talk about a pickpocket world, man. You could like every pair of pants I had a button or a zipper on it, because I was like, I am not even playing. And like, my wife had her phone stolen.
Oh geez,
it's a nightmare, man. So yeah, that's not to mention, like, you get the craziest thing I thought about New Orleans, and I know Sean, you've been there, I'm not sure if you guys have been there, but
it's been a while.
Yeah, like the streets are completely jacked because of the weather, right? So you've got these potholes that are, you know, 2 feet deep and 3 feet wide, and they're not like just in the street where the cars are driving, they're everywhere, sidewalks, like. And then you mix in tons of alcohol because everybody's drinking.
I was gonna say, everybody's drunk.
Oh my gosh, the hospitals must be just filled with people with, like, you know, like cut up legs and messed up shins, and I'm sure people are falling all over the place there.
Yeah, it's out of hand. Walking around with those big ass hurricanes. That's the danger in New Orleans when they give
I was
you...
really excited. Yeah, I wanted to go there for a long time. And then when we're flying in, I had a window seat on the plane, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm like, all I see is brown and blue. It's like little dots of blue all over the place. As we come in, I realize, like, it's just the brown of like the swamp and all the area around there. And it was mixed with the blue tarps over everybody's houses because all their roofs were fucked up. So just is a crazy world, man. We had a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong, but it was just, it's a definitely a different world in San Diego. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
Driving through, there's a trip too. I didn't drive through New Orleans, but I drove through Louisiana cross country like a year and a half ago, and it's gorgeous, but it's so, you're driving, it's like nothing but trees on the side, and then you hit this crazy bridge and you're like, oh, we're driving over swamp right now, you know, and then you hit the Mississippi and you're going over the, it's really is a trip out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, people are very friendly though. I can tell you, cops in Louisiana compared to Texas, much friendlier. Unfortunately, right. I know that for a fact.
I've never been to either, but I don't question it. That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, New Orleans is a city that's kind of like parts, like, I guess kind of like Long Beach or maybe some other like urban area where it's like very split very quickly. So like, since it has like the Bourbon Street area and like the downtown area where Cafe du Monde is, it's like very kind of nice-ish, not nice, nice, but nice-ish. And then you go to that to the Ninth Ward like that.
Yeah.
So I remember I was driving, we were driving through New Orleans, like to go to like the New Orleans Modern Art Museum. We had to drive through the Ninth Ward. And it was like, kind of like any other urban central area, but it was a trip that it went from night and day like that. When also with the, what Jeff mentioned with the urban planning, like the streets were even worse in non-urban street areas. Because all these houses are built in the 1920s, right?
Yeah, and some before then even.
Yeah, so they're not built for... I'm in a building from 1970. I feel like I'm in something new. I guess Jeff, you haven't been.
What were you out there for, Aaron?
Oh, we were just on vacation. It's Vanessa's birthday. It was 2018, New Orleans.
Nice.
Yeah, 2018. So it was nice. It was good weather. I mean, it was cold. Yeah, it was cold, but good weather. It wasn't raining. Mm-hmm. Had those big drinks and the whole shebang.
The hurricanes.
Yeah. The piano bar with the mirror on top of the piano so you can see the dude tickling the ivories.
I think that I wonder if that's the same piano bar, because there is it like the most famous piano bar around there? Yeah, that's I was there as a kid, and my parents have stories of that piano bar, and it gets a little wild in there. Well, I mean, it did. This was the 80s.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it was, I think we were there before Mardi Gras, I think, like a couple weeks before, a couple weeks after. I forgot what it was. So it was still partying, but it wasn't like off the hook partying kind of thing. We went to Channing Tatum's bar, which was very interesting. Got some good food.
Channing Tatum has a bar in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Is he from there? That's interesting.
I think so. Or is he Florida, man? I don't remember.
Well, I mean, if you're from Florida, you try to, you know, rep another area anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking from experience, people don't remember that I'm technically born in Florida.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I've only ever been to Florida one time, and I can't even really say that I went to Florida.
Yeah,
I can
Orlando
only say I went to Orlando. Yeah, that's same. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I did the Fort Lauderdale airport on a bounce trip for our honeymoon. So there you go. That's about it.
Well, and even Miami, like you know, I was born in Miami and lived there when I was super little. Even Miami is, it's not quite Orlando, what Orlando is nowadays, but Miami's not, like, the panhandle is Florida. Like, get up to Gainesville and shit, and it's like, oh. And I drove through there on that road trip, and it had been 20 plus years since I'd even been in the state of Florida, let alone in the panhandle, and I was like, oh yeah, this is what it's like here. All very friendly, but just don't say the wrong thing, you know what I mean?
So you just went on like a super long road trip across the country, or?
Oh yeah. Well, in 2021, and I think I talked about this a couple years ago, a year and a half ago on my podcast, we did cause my wife Diana's mother had passed away in January, 2021. And so it was still pandemic, and her grandmother, who's turning 100 in April, can't fly anymore. And so basically we needed to go to Florida and do like a memorial and all this stuff. And I still didn't really want to go flying, especially with having a 4-year-old, you know, Zoe was 4 at the time. And so it was like, let's take a road trip. We'll take a few weeks and have fun. And I have family in Texas, you know, so we spent a little time in Texas. We saw Art, who you guys know, in Arizona on the way back, another friend in Arizona on the way out. So we ended up borrowing some friends' RV and just did a whole road trip all the way out to Florida. And then all the way back, we spent about 3.5 weeks. Well, the whole trip was like 3.5 weeks, but we stayed in Florida for an entire week at like this RV resort in West Palm Beach, where that's where my father-in-law is right now. He has a condo out there. And at the time, Di's grandmother was living in the condo. And so we all went out there, and not to take over the conversation for a sec, but that was the funny thing is I got pulled over in Texas, and the guy was a complete jackass. Like, and it was so funny because my wife died. She was pissed because we got pulled over because he said I was swerving a little bit. And Di turns to him. He's on my, you know, she's in the passenger seat, and she goes, "It's windy," like loudly. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. We're in Texas here. The state trooper, we're in like East Texas, not in like Dallas, you know, or Austin. We stopped in Austin, very different, you know, and wrote me up a warning. And at one point he's like, is it just the three of you traveling? You know, my kid's in a car seat in the like captain's seat in the back there. And again, my wife's like, well, my mother's riding in the storage thing. It's her ashes. And he just goes, oh, okay. Writes the warning and we go off. And then in Louisiana, I got pulled over for an actual reason. Cause I went to, you know, and I don't know, you guys are, I know to you, Johnny, I don't know if you're from California originally, you know, it's like slow for emergency workers. So you can still be in the lane. Like, let's say there's a tow truck or an ambulance or something, or a police car on the shoulder, you can still be in that lane. But literally in Louisiana, you have to change lanes. And so I didn't do a lane change because a cop had someone pulled over. And so I get lit up and I'm just like, oh, come on. And that guy, I pull over and he's like super nice. And he's like, I see California plates. Just so you know, we got to do this. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. He had a legit reason for pulling me over. Super like Southern hospitality, you know, everything else. And just he's like, all right, have a good night. And, you know, off we went, you know, talk to us for a few minutes and off we went. And it was such a
drastic
difference. It really was. And the state troopers from both states. And I just remember turning to die. I'm like, hey, that guy was so much nicer. Like, I'd much rather be driving through Louisiana than Texas. You know, sure enough, it was proven there. But like I said, we went out there for the memorial, literally traveling with my mother-in-law's ashes out to Florida, and all the family flew into there because, you know, at the time, 98-year-old grandmother couldn't travel and still can't. So but now she'll be 100 next month. Yeah.
Wow.
But it also was a lot of fun. I tell you, we were driving and I was like, I understand why people retire and get a big RV and just kind of travel around. It's so much fun. You pull up.
I would love to do that.
And I'm telling you, anyone that says to me, like, I would love, and it is well worth it. You get the RV, you just, you know, schedule your stops at the RV parks, like the KOAs and stuff. And you roll in, plug in the RV, pull out a couple camp chairs and crack open a drink. And you're like, all right, we're hanging for a couple days. It's so much fun. It really is. Yeah.
Aaron, you went on a trip with Mikey when he was on the bus for a while, right? Yeah.
You met with us in Vegas. We weren't on the bus there, but so.
Oh, you weren't.
Mikey's sister lived in Chicago or suburbs or whatever, and they were moving out because her husband got a job at Disneyland or something like that. So Mikey's like, hey, they're gonna pay us to drive the truck, and like we didn't have to help them pack or anything like that. Just drive the truck for them. They'll follow us in the truck. They'll pay for our hotel. They'll pay for our food. The whole shebang. So yeah, we flew to Chicago, met them, and then just drove out through cornfields down to Vegas, which was a fun one. I mean, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of that flat kind of flatland, you know, the whole Dumb and Dumber kind of flat stuff. Right. That's just not my thing, but it was fun because it was just me and Mikey talking shit for 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day. I mean, it was interesting. So, you know, the stereotype is when you're in a closed space with somebody, you kind of like get all the intricacies of like who they are, all the little things. That was like that with me and Mikey. Like some days we're like at each other's throats. And then we got out and we got in the hotel room or got to Vegas and just kind of chilled. But it was very interesting. Driving, one thing that I've seen, because I did a drive to New Mexico once in 2017, because that's where my dad was from. Doing a drive like that by yourself is definitely like not emotional, but like kind of like laborious on your psyche.
How many hours is that?
I think if you did it straight, it's 13 hours.
Wow. Because the longest I think I've driven by myself was just out to Arizona. And I can say I've had some experiences just being by yourself, on a flat road for that long. Yeah. You have these experiences, right?
It was the thing is to the flatland thing. I was cool because it looked nice. Like I'm a fan of the desert. And then when you get up to Santa Fe and Albuquerque, it's mountainous and it's very nice. But the trip was, so I was, not to get too into the weeds about it, I was very hungover on the night before I left. Like, so I wake up at 6 a.m. with a splitting headache and I'm like, I just need to get home. So before I did a stop in Phoenix and then to Santa Fe, but this time I'm like, I'm going to go straight home. But it was fine. I got to Tucson. I visited a friend in Tucson, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was kind of chugging along, listening to a lot of podcasts. But the last stretch from Tucson to San Diego was at night. And I don't know if you ever made that. You guys have probably made that drive at night in like Arizona to El Centro area. It's pure black for probably 4 hours. That was probably the only time where I was kind of going a little cuckoo.
I've actually got a crazy story about that. Like that same exact stretch. Like I was headed out to, I think I was headed out to Arizona, and it was one of those dark nights, you know, where it's just, you can't see anything in front of you. I think it was even foggy too. Mm-hmm. And it had been raining and I was cruising, you know how you get, like you start cruising 80 miles is like the minimum on those straightaways, especially if it's that dark. Like, I don't know, like I just throw on the brights and haul ass. That's just how I am. But I had my wife in the car with me, and we see a cop up ahead, pulled over with its lights on, and the lights aren't the like go this way or go that way lights. They're just like the I've pulled somebody over lights. And so I'm like, oh, somebody got busted hauling ass on this road, you know? And it's raining, but it's not like it had been raining way more the previous week, and like it had kind of cleared up. So I'm hauling ass. I see the cop, so I slow down a little bit, but I'm not too worried about a cop on a straightaway who's already pulled somebody over. And so I slowed it down, but I probably was still over the speed limit at that point as I was passing by the cop. Well, what I didn't realize was that when I get to the cop hadn't actually pulled somebody over. What he was doing was he was there as a warning that there was a flood, and the flood was crossing the main road.
Oh.
And I'm like, how am I supposed to know that that's what the case was? So I see it, you know, 20 feet ahead of me, and I try to slow down, but I also don't want to like slam on the brakes and go sliding all over the place. So we just busted through that, dude. And it was terrifying. It was like when Shamu hits the water, like it was a huge splash. Like it definitely did some damage to the front end. We had like sticks and all sorts of stuff stuck in the grill, and it's like, man, it was like a little bit more warning would have been nice, but who knows what the system or what the situation was that brought that about.
Yeah, were you still in Arizona or were you in California at that point?
I want to say we're still in Arizona at that point.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I wonder if that's like a thing in Arizona where if you see a cop like doing that to the side, it's like, watch out for flooding. Whereas in California, we're like, what? You know what right? I mean? But I agree. Right. Let's get like a sign out there or something, or like the traffic brakes. That's what they do here. Have like a cop going back and forth. So you're like, oh shit, don't go forward.
Yeah.
So I would have the same thought. I'd be like, oh, he's already got somebody, you know,
or just like shine the light that I see like there's something going on in the road. You could have put the light at the water. I would have been like, oh, there's water there.
They got like road flares and shit too. I know they have those.
That's what I was thinking. Throw some flares out or something.
Have you done a whole lot of travel, Johnny?
No, nothing like that. The furthest outside of California I've ever been is to Reno. And me and my family drove out there. I mean, probably like 2014 or something like that. So I don't have any cool travel stories like that. I mean, that and I've gone up to like Lake Tahoe area in the wintertime when I was really young. But nothing crazy and nothing by myself. It was always when I was younger and with family.
You're from a pretty cool area though. Like, what was it? Was it Fisherman's Wharf that we went to when I came up and visited with you guys?
Yeah.
That's some super bomb soup.
Right. That was, in Santa Cruz. I don't think it was Fisherman's Wharf, but I forget the name of it. I think Fisherman's Wharf is in San Francisco and we were in Santa Cruz.
Don't they have that, like that beachfront kind of like amusement park thing in Santa Cruz? So that
exactly.
That's what it was. Yeah.
The boardwalk is what they call
it. Yeah. I remember being there once.
Random trivia is they filmed part of that that movie Us, the Jordan Peele movie. They filmed on the boardwalk there. Just random trivia.
That's pretty sweet. I've seen all of his stuff. I like all of his stuff pretty much. I just like unique writing, something that's different than the stereotypical writing.
I wholeheartedly agree. I got lucky enough actually a few months back when I moved down here. I went to go see Nope in the movie theaters, and I ended up seeing it all by myself. I had the entire theater to myself, so I was sitting in there hitting my vape pen and shit.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah. It sucks for Jordan Peele. He's not selling tickets, but sweet for you.
A lot of theaters around the country. Yeah, I'm sure he still did well enough.
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing fine. You're right.
Yeah.
You guys seen those movies? What do you guys think?
I mean, I saw the first one, Get Out, you know, when it came out. But I missed Us, and Nope is probably, I want to see it kind of thing. But it's all about the queue, so to speak.
Nope has the most scarring scenes out of all of them, I think. And it's just because they just involved an animal. And anytime you involve an animal, it's like, oh, man, it's just so much more scarring. Like, you can kill all the people you want. As soon as you kill a dog in a movie, everybody's like, what the fuck is this? Yep.
Yeah, I haven't seen him yet. And I would like to. But for me, my film school comes in, and then my OCD comes in, and I have to be like prepared. You know what I mean? So like, it's hard for me to, when I was younger, I could just throw on those films. And now I'm like, all right, I gotta be ready. You know? So I end up watching more mindless stuff throughout the day, with the exception of some stuff. Like I watch the shows, but when it comes to like a movie that I know is intense in a good way, then I'm like, I gotta be ready up to fully appreciate it. You know? So I've yet to see any of them. But just because of that, not because I don't want to, but more just like, oh, I need to sit and appreciate this.
Yeah, it's super tough. I would imagine being a dad to, you know, find any time, let alone an hour and a half. Well, these days, 2.5-3 hours for some of these movies to carve out and actually pay attention to versus just having on in the background, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's totally how it is. And especially with the kiddo, like, and not even just those intense movies. Like, you guys know me. I've yet to watch Clerks 3. Like that, just because I can't find the time to do it. And I'm like, my 6-year-old comes in and, you know, there's a typical Jay scene where he's doing something stupid. And then I got to answer a bunch of questions. And she's asking her teacher, like, why Jay has a dildo, or like going back to Clerks too. Like, why is there a donkey and what's that man doing to it? You know,
yeah. Like, what's a mangina?
Yeah. Stuff like that. And so, so it's tough even for like those comedic movies, you know. Shows and stuff I can get through, because the kid goes to bed and then like I'll be out here or die and I'll be out here and watch comedic stuff or even more serious stuff, but in like hour increments at the most, you know. Like, we just started watching that Poker Face. I don't know if you've seen any, like, just the first episode so far. It took us 2 sittings to get through the first episode because it's like, all right, someone's falling asleep, pause it. And you know, but it's easier to digest those things because and especially you hit a certain point where you're just tired. And I know Aaron's in the thick of it much more than I am. Like when I was in Aaron's position, I was getting no sleep.
Aaron just had a baby. Yeah. Like just had a baby.
It was his 2-week birthday yesterday.
I was going to say it's about 2 weeks. Right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I mean, to that point, I railed through 6 seasons of a show very easily.
Actually, and see, you know what? See, that's the other thing too. You're more tired, but I do remember, and I will admit to this, it's more because Di wanted to watch it. When Zoe was first born, I had never seen this show. I knew of it, but I'd never seen it. But we got through the entire series of Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
Like, just because when that is, you're more tired, but you can watch, and Gilmore Girls isn't, you know, but you could watch a Kevin Smith movie with a 2-week-old, 1-month, they don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah,
you know, 6-year-old, they're picking it all up. You know, I've hit the point where I have to like watch, even just watching like sporting events on TV, and my kid enjoys, you know, watching basketball and hockey games, and but then like Cocaine Bear will come on, like the trailer, and it's like, well, I don't need to explain to her why this bear is going crazy. You know, she thinks bears are cute. Like, so they do hit.
I heard you talking about that in your podcast, and I thought that was interesting because I'm like trying to think if there's like an equivalent to that when we were growing up. And you know, they had like beer commercials and stuff like that, and cigarette commercials, but like I'm trying to think of, like, you know, I guess like horror movies would probably be like the most scarring thing that I would see pop up. And so I guess it would be comparable to that. But yeah, it's a pretty, that's a tough one to teach your kid about. Like, yeah, so yeah, that's a tough one, man.
Exactly. And I'm not a prude parent by any means, but it, and for me, it's like, you know, I just don't want her going to school and being like, oh, Cocaine Bear or like whatever else, you know. It's the same thing with cursing. Like, she'll listen to some music that is cursing in it, but we don't do it at home. And it's not so much that I am a prude and I don't want her to curse. I just don't want her to go to kindergarten being like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Like, that's not a good look. Like, you know,
there's,
I don't want those
definitely
phone calls.
Yeah, there's definitely 10-year-old kids like in school right now, like playing Cocaine Bear, like, and that's what they do. Like, it's just, you know, that is how life is. But yeah, I mean, how do you shelter with this world? And especially, I was talking to Mikey about YouTube, and he was talking about how Ray Ray like will get on YouTube and how he's gonna like really monitor it. And I was like, I'll just put him on YouTube Kids. What's the problem? I was like, or just like set him up with a playlist that is his playlist. That way, he's not getting suggested videos. And he told me, he's like, after a video, it doesn't matter. By the end of the video, it'll pop up with suggested videos, you know, a lot of the time, or it'll be like a, one of the things up in the corner that'll say suggested, or they'll like suggest a video within the video. And so it just always, there's always one way or another to lead the kid off track. And I'm not saying that there's some like devilish scheme or anything, but man, it is fucking difficult, I would imagine.
Oh. No, the algorithm is evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was gonna say, I'll call it evil too.
Yeah, no, I've watched stuff on YouTube, like, because I watch innocuous stuff, food stuff, shoe stuff, sports stuff, like nothing, but the occasional my own viewpoint, political stuff, whatever. But it's a second I gets its hooks in, it'll just give you some dark stuff up real quickly. And my friend, I was talking to a friend once at my old job, and he was talking about Jordan Peterson, just a normal self-help guy, right? He's got other things going on, obviously, but a self-help guy at the end. That's why my friend was watching it. But he was like, yeah, you know, I'm really a fan of his, and I didn't argue with them. I didn't, you know, whatever, like it's a self-help thing that you're going after. But then he started asking me, but they recommended me this guy, and they recommended me this guy. And the guys that he was saying were like, no bueno. So he said, you know, he didn't know any better. I don't expect him to be terminally online and know everything about everybody. But the algorithm knows that once you watch this, you'll watch this for longer kind of thing. So for a kid, you know, they're going to, it depends. I don't know how YouTube Kids works, if it's like age based or whatever, but all the algorithm cares about is what gets eyeballs on. And what gets eyeballs on is, how do I put this? Not extreme stuff, but like intense stuff.
No, I totally get what you're saying. It's like a kid looks up a clip from like Home Alone, the hotel scene, and before you know it, he's got, you know, Trump preaching to him about.
Yeah. Oh no, I fallen asleep to YouTube before and just let it play. And I'm like, how the hell? It's like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I was like, how the hell did it get here?
It's a fun game, at least.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh man, yeah. I definitely get some weird ass suggestions, and you look up one thing, and then for me, it's mostly like Amazon and things that I look at to buy, and then man, sure, it's just everywhere. And I definitely am not as careful with like unsubscribing from this BS all the time, but man, it gets annoying.
Well, with the baby stuff, I get ads, like weird ads. Like Vanessa looks up something, and then I get the ad. And vice versa. Or we, you know, it's always you don't know if it's psychosomatic about when you're talking about something and then you get ad afterwards. You're like, oh, the mic was recording me. It's probably a little bit more complicated than that. But it's eerie sometimes. And you don't really know where it comes from. That's the weirdest thing, because all these companies, that's how they get their scratch, is by sharing ad stuff. AdSense, Google,
yeah,
whatever.
All that's that's all the stuff that they call data. When they're selling your data, that's what they're talking about.
It's not specific data. Like, they don't know that me and my wife are married. The algorithm doesn't know that. They know that we live together and we've been living together for however many years because of geolocation. Because the metadata is just very general. My age, maybe my name, you know, who I live with, that kind of thing. But that it can extrapolate very easily because on top of that algorithm is, you know, research, focus groups, all that stuff. And that's how they know that we have a kid, or they knew that we had a kid on the way. So they just gave us stuff.
You guys remember like 10 years ago when they like released facial recognition software to the public and they're like, hey, look, you know, we can tell if you stole a bag of M&Ms from Walmart or whatever, right? But then we just stopped hearing about it. Like, nobody talks about facial recognition anymore, but that shit's still out there. And I'm guarantee you it's 10 years better than it was then.
It's purely government now for the most part.
Oh yeah, I would imagine. Private companies, right?
Because the airports used to have that thing where you would—I think it was JetBlue or something like that—where you would stand in front of it, and that would be your boarding pass. But people got really freaked out about it. So, for lack of a better term, they kind of sunsetted it a little bit. But I think a lot of that cutting edge stuff is all government.
And
you know, because you see, China has that too. China has more of a surveillance, the same amount of surveillance data as us, but they use it more in front where we have it more in the back.
Yeah. London, I mean, England, but London specifically is the same way. Yeah. And larger venues and stuff around the US use that. So like stadiums and ballparks, for example. So like, Jeff, I know you go to a lot of Padres games. They have facial recognition, not everywhere, but they have it there. Cause the question always comes up when you get banned from a stadium or an arena or anything like that. They're like, well, how do you enforce that? And they're like, there's facial recognition, actually. So they're seeing everybody that's coming into the park or the stadium or the arena, whatever it is. And, you know, they're utilizing it there. But I'm sure it's mostly covered. I mean, and to Aaron's point, that I think when it's out in the open more, it becomes a little more, you're like, okay, we're it's a give and take here, as opposed to certain areas like the U.S. where you just don't know what's going on. I froze.
Who froze? You froze.
Yeah, you froze for a second.
Oh, sorry.
A bit on my end.
Yeah, I see it here, but
I saw it. So I saw in New York City, I think a couple weeks ago. I think, Sean, this is kind of what you were talking about, where there was someone coming out of a music. I think it was a music venue where someone just had a straight up camera, just recording everybody coming out of the venue. It's a little too, you know, probably too obvious, but when it comes, like when actually people see the surveillance, it's kind of like, not to get too weird about it, it's like Schrodinger's cat. Like it's only there when you see it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because all this other surveillance that we kind of allude to, like we can't really quantify it because it's all abstract. Like,
speaking of which, I don't know if you've been to Petco Park or noticed that, like, there's giant towers. There's about three giant towers around Petco Park that are built into the park. And if you're there during a game and you're, you know, paying attention, you'll notice that there's two snipers in each of those towers. Two snipers for a baseball game. But, like, that's the world we live in, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to try to do something crazy, you'll get taken out quick.
Well, and like in Disneyland, like Aaron was saying, coming out of a venue, they're taking your picture. That's what they do at Disneyland now. If you go to Disneyland, they're taking your picture. Everybody that goes through and I think Disney World too, I just haven't been there. But if you're going through the turnstiles, they take your picture when they take your ticket, you know. And literally, like, I was there a little over a year ago when it was still like, all right, I'm going to wear, and they were enforcing masks on rides, you know. And when you're walking in, they're like, literally, like, lower your mask. We got to take your picture, and then it's attached to your ticket. So Disney's just got everyone. Yeah, that's how they enforce, like, not being able to pass off your ticket stub now. You know, they don't hand stamp you anymore. What they do is they take your picture. And so if you're in Disneyland and then you go over to California Adventure with a park hopper, when they scan your ticket, it pops up a picture, and they literally look and say, oh, no, that is you that went into Disneyland. Yeah.
Dang, Disney, if they get my picture, they're just updating my profile at this point, because I've been going there since I was a kid. I went there when they did like the thumbprint for a while.
Yeah.
So trust me, they've got everything they need if they ever want to take me out.
Well, and honestly, like, that's me overall. I'm kind of like, what are you going to do? You know,
well, you know, the saying is like, oh, if you're not doing anything illegal, you got nothing to worry about. Right. That's kind of like what we've been saying for just stuff with cops for a long time. I'm like that with this kind of stuff. I'm like,
me too.
If their only point is to sell me things, cool. Like I can skip an ad. Like that ain't no thing. But it's the other side of the coin where it's kind of muddy waters. Where what else? You know, why else are you doing this? Is it like a database of everybody? That's a different story. But if you're just selling people things, which is the motivation for 90% of the things that happen in this world or in this country, at least, that's fine. I got no problem with people trying to sell me things.
Yeah,
you know. But that's the thing about internet services being free. Like, imagine Google, right? Google's free for us, but the trade-off is they sell our data, take our data, but we get stuff for free. People have that disconnect about not paying monthly for something or paying whatever for something. It's just a kind of a mental blind spot, I guess.
Right. Well, and sometimes when your data is collected, it kind of works out in your benefit. And I'm not trying to say that, like, I'm not trying to say you should put your data out there. I'm just saying, like I got a notice today from Spotify, and I got access to pre-sale tickets, 1 week early pre-sale tickets, because they know that I listen to that band more than just about anybody. And they're like, hey, you want to go to the show? I'm like, that's fucking awesome, man. That's so cool. So,
I basically draw the line at like, cameras recording me in my house, but everyone who's like, oh, your phone's a microphone, I'm like, so what are they gonna
hear me three bowls of Cocoa Pebbles at midnight, like
exactly, like, there's nothing going on. I just rather no one seeing me walk around naked, but outside of that, like, whatever. Like, it's cool, man.
And even still, like,
yeah, if you want to see it, I guess. Yeah, it's true.
Are you guys listening to anything new? Any good new music right now?
In the last 3 weeks, I haven't. But
well, then
I'm gonna go grab another.
Don't speak up,
while Jeff gets that.
Hold on, let me pull this up. If you want to get.
I'll filibuster about what I'm listening to right now, which is that's the only reason I'm gonna grab another beer. Yeah. Go get it.
I got some good stuff. Never mind.
I've been just listening to it. Probably not up any of your guys' alley, but the previous members of Lifehouse started a new band, which I guess Aaron's somewhat interested in that, considering he was in one of their music videos.
I just told Vanessa about that the other I forgot about it too. The other ones that I was in, that's like the marquee one I can always talk about, but I always forget about the Lifehouse one.
Yeah, it's good stuff, dude. The members started a new band called Oswald, and it's way more like hipster groove rock, I guess, like, or hipster indie rock.
Like shoegaze, or
that's what I was thinking. Shoegaze, like the little white t-shirts and the jeans and the white chucks. Like,
yeah, they've got fedoras on and stuff.
Oh, so like the 1975, like that kind of stuff.
But it's good music, and like they sound very much like the Beatles, kind of like a new age Beatles. So it's like they even do like Beatles covers and stuff. And I've always liked that singer, so I was just like, it was a cool thing. I just never knew they existed. I just randomly popped up. I was wondering what happened to Lifehouse after all this time.
Like that Blur is like that. I think Blur's not around anymore. They had that Beatles-y, new-y groove vibe back in the late 90s or whatever. Well, mid to late 90s.
Well, Blur is essentially Gorillaz now.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen Blur. Blur's still around, and they still tour. Oh. I saw them live, and I played a show with them back in the day.
Sean, did you see that clip of Damon Allerin playing that he was doing the preset for Feel Good Incorporated? He You showed the I think it was like a reporter.
Yeah.
That the beat and the rhyme, the beat and the melody for it was just a pure preset from some like crappy toy from the 80s.
Yeah, totally. Made a ton of money.
Well, dude, Apple loops, like GarageBand loops, that's in the early aughts, so many hits were used with that.
Yeah.
Like and then Jeff, you know about this. Reason? I've heard Reason loops, like distinct ones that we have used in random movies, in soundtracks, and
Reason
whatever.
Is everywhere. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's actually a guy on tour right now. His name's Chris Grau. I don't know if you've heard of him. He does a lot of music videos, but he's got his own little band called Loser. He's also part of Littlest Man Band or whatever, but Loser is essentially, and it's L-O-U-S-E-R or whatever. But a lot of his music is sampled from like old Nintendo. Like his whole shtick is like Nintendo classic games and stuff. And so he creates music kind of around a lot of those little beats from mm-hmm. classic games. You know, and he's not wildly successful, but
does he sample it or does he play it?
Oh, he samples it. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, it's mostly, but he combines them in studio. I haven't listened. You're going to put this out. Sorry, Chris. I haven't listened to a ton of Loser, but I just, again, bandwidth, you know, but that's what he does. He's touring right now. He's running around somewhere. Yeah. With like Littlest Man Band and Loser and a couple other bands. But it's an interesting take. People seem to like it.
Well, I was genuinely asking about it, but honestly, and this is kind of a controversial opinion, sometimes sampling stuff is even harder than playing it straight up.
Agreed.
I mean, yeah. you can look at a Pulse Boutique for a prime example of that with the Dust Brothers. Like, nobody can do, like, it's very hard to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've seen people play MPC with sampling beats, like, for 90s hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Like the Jenga of that or the Rubik's Cube is that is very taxing on the kind of like on the music making process, because the music making process is for lack of a better term very linear. I mean, it depends on the person obviously, but with you writing, you know, writing the song, that's your song kind of thing. But when you have to formulate something from something else, it's harder because it's not the pure, that's not the purest form of music.
It's almost like a puzzle versus a painting. Like, I'm not saying it's easy to paint, but you can kind of go with your own groove. Like, as Bob Ross said, like, no mistakes, just happy accidents. Whereas a puzzle, it's like, you can't be like, happy accident and shove it together.
Right. that's why covers don't always hit.
Yeah.
Because covers are not just the notes and the groove. It's the vibe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had plenty of covers are like, oh, well, they're playing the same exact melody just with a heavy guitar, you know, that doesn't feel the same with someone kind of capturing the vibe or capturing the feeling kind of thing.
Right. Which is why there's even examples of bands or artists doing like acoustic reimagined versions of songs that, even though it's completely different notes, it can capture that vibe so well if they do it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a tenuous situation because it's I feel like Jeff, you probably have more experience maybe, but like I've heard covers where it introduced me to the song and I feel kind of bad about it sometimes when it's that reverse engineering is already there. I remember the show I was watching with the new, like with the thing, they played a sample where it was from a hip hop song. Like, oh, that song was sampled? I thought that was the song. And I found out they sampled a 70s R&B song. And I didn't feel like actively bad, but I'm like, this is really a weird example, but Limp Bizkit Faith with George Michael.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I mean, obviously as a 17, 16 year old, I didn't give a shit about George Michael, but now after hearing the actual song Faith, I like that song better, and I felt like I should have been introduced to that type of music earlier on. And then not to take away from what I listened to back then, because I still like that to a certain degree, but that cover kind of like introduces you at a different angle from the actual music.
Yeah.
Which is a double-edged sword.
I remember Changes from Tupac. I had no idea who, what's his name was. Oh my gosh.
Steve? No, not Steve.
No. Bruce Hornsby.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had no idea what that song was. And then you hear the Tupac where he samples Bruce Hornsby and you're like, oh, this is great. And then it's like, oh, wait, now I like Bruce Hornsby. Like,
I felt very similarly when I first heard like Biggie growing up and I was young, listening to hip hop and like the Isley Brothers. I'm like, oh, what? Like, that's the Isley Brothers. Okay.
I think it was Steely Dan, Black Cow, I think, with Uptown Baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
1990. It was like, I forgot, Peter Guns and something Sadiq. That was the song. And then I heard Steely Dan. I think that song got me into Steely Dan. So that was the double-edged sword that I was talking about.
Right.
But you have to be ready for it. But it can introduce you to that wider range kind of thing. So that's why samples can work in the right hands, obviously. When people straight up thieve, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's like Offspring, right? Offspring just like jacks everybody's song structure and then writes their own lyrics over it. And like,
pretty much.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I mean, and there's some proof of that.
Later Offspring, not early Offspring.
Okay, okay.
Early more grunge punk Offspring was more original. And then as they got into like Pretty Fly for a White Guy and stuff is when basically after they were Offspring and became the Offspring again is when they started doing that shit. From my understanding.
They were essentially sampling but not giving the credit due, which is like, I mean, if you're going to do it, you might as well give the credit that's due. And then, like you said, there's that natural progression where you go find that other music. Faith was a good one, man. I remember I got that album, that Limp Bizkit album for Christmas, and I felt so awkward. I must have been like, 15 or something, right? And I'm like listening to Limp Bizkit during Christmas time. It's supposed to be all this happy music. And it's like, back then that was pretty hardcore for me. I mean, so...
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure I borrowed Aaron's, what was that, $3 bill, y'all, or whatever that was?
The guy with the jeans.
I had Aaron's copy for a while, and then I'm pretty sure Art ended up with it, and then that was the end of it, because Aaron and I used to have a saying, Art's DJ mix, because he would borrow a CD, and CDs would just be flying around his fucking car, like, and you're just like, where's that CD? And we get it back, and it's scratched, and Aaron was the one that came up with it. He's like, it's just Art's DJ mix, because you put it in, it's like...
Art always had discs all over his car. And I totally remember that. Yep. You're absolutely just right.
Everywhere. Like Aaron and I are like super, this is the late 90s. So CDs are supreme. Like we're just super careful. And Art's just like, throw that over there.
I had the big old sleeve and everything like that. If I remember correctly, I remember my sleeve got jacked in like 99 or 2000, before we graduated, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like right when CDs were king for sure.
That's all you could do. Like vinyl was around, but that's what you did with CDs. Pre-digital.
I remember buying tapes back in the day. I had a tape for Blue Album.
Yeah.
Whenever that was.
Yeah, 93, 94.
Yeah, something like that. Because Pinkerton was set 97. So
yeah.
I had a ton of cassette tapes. I had a ton of them. And I think the very first actual, because I was not a well-off young child, so I would, get a dollar and I'd go buy a single from the Warehouse Music or whatever, little cassette tape. And that was even when CDs were king. So I'd be off in that tiny little section that had like the little cassette tapes back there. And I had my yellow Walkman, that would like latch close so that when you dropped it, when you were rollerblading, it wouldn't break.
I don't think I remember having a huge CD player. It was mostly car stuff, but I do remember my first iPod, whenever that 2001, because I remember it was right after we graduated. I remember I had my first iPod, which was, three times the size of this thing.
Right.
right.
Because it had a spindle hard. It had a SATA spindle hard drive,
Yep.
Yeah. And it probably had about 2 gigs of storage on it.
Yep.
if that, I think.
First one had a gig. Like,
no, it was like 500 megabytes.
Was it? Okay.
Just off the top of my head, and my Apple stuff was pre is after that fact, but yeah. I'm pretty sure it was very low for sure. It was like 500 songs, so whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Aaron and I first went to college, I had a laptop, and I had dual hard drives in my laptop. And remember the Sony BIOS, Aaron? And
yeah,
you had the tower. I had,
yeah, and you had the laptop. Yeah,
I had the laptop, and mine was, and it was like, it's a massive 20 gigs, and it was a dual hard drive. And then, like, we're at college, and Aaron's like, I have 40 gigs in my tower. And we're all just like, oh my God. And now
you guys are all bastards to me, because you're walking around with your iPods and crap, and I have a Zune that I found in the trash.
I had an iPod for probably about 2 months, and then it got jacked.
Yeah, no, this was a laptop I had to have for college. Like, and Aaron, I think same thing. He had a tower. The Sony Vaio was like the big thing. Late 2000s.
Most of my computers have come from Aaron. So I'm not arguing with Aaron's choice on computers. Most of the computers I have are old Aaron computers.
Are you still using the old one that I gave you, the tower thing? Motherfucker. I have another one. Do you need a newer computer?
Yeah.
He does, because Premiere doesn't run.
Yeah, I do. I got
nothing runs.
I got a 2017-ish laptop you can use. That's not
I got a couple computers here, but they're not Macs, so I don't think you want it.
Nah,
yeah,
I
see,
don't.
I know Jeff's gonna shake his head.
Dude, I'm recording on my work computer right now, so I'm all good. And work doesn't care. Yeah. My name is out there. I forgot. But yeah, you can. Next time I see you, you can use the computer. It's sitting in a shoebox right now, so it's perfect. And cool. It's much faster than that. It's not shit, but it's an old computer.
I have a laptop as well, but I go to that one when I need something that's heavy duty.
Mac laptop?
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it. Because I can definitely use some tech help, that's for sure.
My bread and butter, baby.
Johnny, are you listening to anything these days? You're usually the music guru.
I mean, I wouldn't call myself that, but not in the past like month or so, pretty much, you know, the new Sleep Token stuff that dropped about like 3 weeks, a month ago. I've been jamming some of that. I've gone back and found some, like, for the past week or so, I've been listening to a band. The last album they released is in 2015. They're called Super Heaven. They do like 90s style grunge, basically. I've been kind of experimenting with listening to them. They're pretty cool.
And you like a lot of like pop punk stuff that's like late 90s, early 2000s stuff too, right?
Yeah, for sure. Even some of the modern pop punk I like.
Well, I'll tell you, I found a new pop punk band, very Southern California pop punk called Taken Days. They're out of Orange County, and if you're into that kind of 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, not the emo-y stuff, but the more SoCal like pop punk, you might enjoy them. Taken Days. I actually shot them last weekend down in Garden Grove.
Nice.
I hadn't had a chance to listen to him yet, and it's so funny because I'd met the guys before at another show before then, and so I'm talking to them before, and they're like, oh, I hope you like it and stuff, and then afterward they're like, oh, what'd you th-? I was like, dude, I grew up in San Diego in the 90s, like, this is literally just right up my alley. If that's what you're into, you'd probably enjoy Taken Days and Chaser's a little harder. They're a little more skate punk.
I'd say the most new pop punk band that I've really enjoyed their stuff is No Pressure. It actually has the lead singer from The Story so far. It's like his side project. They're really good. I guess I would describe it as like maybe a little bit more skate punk than pure pop punk, but definitely has pop punk influences on it for sure. And I saw them live about a year ago in like a bowling alley. There was like a bar off to the side of a bowling alley in San Jose, where I'm from. It was a really, really
good show.
Those
are my favorite shows.
Hell yeah, they are.
I love
that. I'm going to bowling
alley
Sunday for a show.
Yeah.
I just love little intimate shows where like it's obvious, like the band's just starting out and they're like, I'm just going to play whatever I can play. Like I saw a band I really like in a clothing store, because I'm guessing they couldn't find a venue in San Diego and they were coming through. So they like just played this clothing store and I was the only fan there. Everybody else was just like passersby. And so I'm like in the crowd singing the lyrics and like they're all playing straight to me. It was heavy.
Right. Yeah, those are the best. And that's pretty much how the.
Is that just
it
me?
Went out.
I lost audio for a sec, Johnny.
Johnny, we lost you.
Can still see you, but no audio.
Yeah, it's bound to happen. Technical issues.
Yeah,
I won't edit it out.
Oh, we got you back.
There you go. Okay. There you go.
Yeah, no, I was just saying that there was like maybe 50 to 75 people in there total. And, you know, crowd surfing, people jumping up on the stage, having a good time. They're actually, I just looked it up. No Pressure, the band I'm talking about, they're going to be at SOMA on June 3rd. So on the side stage.
Oh, and I'm looking at it too. And you know what? They're playing Belasco. I might have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Belasco Theater is real close for me. I just pulled up their site.
Yeah.
Have you been to SOMA yet, Johnny?
No, not yet. But I've only heard good things about.
We're talking about the same SOMA, right?
It's a third iteration. It's not our SOMA, Aaron.
The sports arena one?
Well, but it's still like the SOMA, like the title, you know.
Yeah. It's the third. The only reason I say not our SOMA because like in the 90s, it was a different location. Like my very first show ever was Unwritten Law with Blink 182 opening for him in 95 or 96. And that was what I thought was the original SOMA. But then I was talking to the merch guy a couple years ago for Buck 09. And apparently, like when we were super young, there was a SOMA downtown, not in the Gaslamp, but nearby. Then they moved to the SOMA that was in, not far from USD. And then now.
Is that the one with the alley in the back or is that the current one?
I'm not sure.
There's like a smoking alley out back.
I think that's
When I went to that SOMA, there was a smoking alley out back. Because I forgot if you were with me, Jeff, or someone else. I saw In Flames and Killswitch at that SOMA.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you see the new In Flames album that came out?
Love it.
Like 2 months ago-ish.
So I'm loving it. Yep. And it looks like the majority of people are loving it too. My brother-in-law, Chris, hit me up and was like, have you heard the new In Flames? And I'm like, dude, I hear all the In Flames because that's all I listen to. But yeah, I was able to go see them like, I want to say like 3 months ago or so. And who they play with? I can't remember the band they played with, but we pretty much just went there, saw them and went home. Like, didn't even stay for the headlining band.
I do that so much.
I've done that before. I saw Mastodon once with my friend.
Oh.
And he was like, yeah. And he gave me the ticket because he had an extra ticket or whatever. And I was like, oh, but Russian Circles is opening for them. That's who I want to see kind of thing. So I was like, Russian Circles is my jam. And then Mastodon was kind of like even though they're the headliner, that was kind of like the second thing. The other thing is I saw a Queensryche show in North Park when we lived over there.
Mm.
But another power metal band was opening up for him. I'm like, that's my favorite power metal band ever, Fate's Warning. Like, I watched Fate's Warning and I was like locked into all the songs, even the new ones that I knew. But Queensryche, I was like, they're good, but I'm not here for them kind of thing, even though they're the headliner, which happens.
Mm-hmm. Was that Observatory, Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't been to that one. We got one here in Santa Ana.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they get there's one in Santa Ana, so it's Observatory OC and then Observatory San Diego, and I've been wanting to get down to Observatory San Diego.
They're Live Nation now, I think.
Yeah, Live Nation bought them all. That's the one thing that sucks is
I've been seeing a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, you probably know this more than we do, but like just the intricacies of that stuff. Oof.
Yeah. I try to avoid the Live Nation venues, but you just end up having to go to them. And it's Live Nation and Ticketmaster because it's the same fucking company now. And they own all the big venues. And that's
they're essentially clear channeling all the venues.
Yeah.
Like the way
it's only the
clear
small
channel did it with radio stations, right?
Yeah, it's only the small venues now that haven't been bought up by the big boys. It's funny, I'm looking at that too. So June 4th, I want to check out this No Pressure, but I'm getting old and 3 days in a row. So let me fill you in on a little. So here's my leading up to that June 4th No Pressure. I will be in Vegas Labor Day weekend with shows all weekend because that's punk rock bowling. Then I come back into town on Tuesday, and then Wednesday I have a show. They have a new Knitting Factory up here. I bet all you guys have been to Knitting Factory, the original one in Hollywood, but there's one in North Hollywood now. Yeah, you've definitely been there, Aaron, because I was right near, and Jeff, I'm sure. I don't know about you, Johnny,
yeah,
being up north. It was a pretty staple venue in Hollywood. And then that closed down, and they reopened it above a restaurant in North Hollywood. It's a cool little venue. But then I go from that to 2 days of Interrupters and then that No Pressure show. So I think I'm going to do it. I'll probably be dead, but going to try to do it. Yeah.
I mean, I recommend
do it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's worth it. And it's probably cheap, like $20-$25 ticket.
That's a good thing too. I already spent the money on the Interrupters tickets and punk rock bowling. So
right.
May as well. And Belasco is close for me. That's the thing that kills me up here is for shows is, and it's getting better now with that Knitting Factory opening and that Belasco is getting more shows, but I'm in, and it's so funny because, you know, people that don't live in California, really, especially Southern California, they're like, oh yeah, no, just go to Orange County. And it's like, yeah, it's 2 hours trying to get there. It's like a Friday show, 2.5 hours. Like, and so I end up going to Orange County so much because that's where all the shows are. And it's just right. been draining the hell out of me, like just drain House of Blues, Chain Reaction, Garden Amphitheater, and then Observatory. They're all, none of them are close. Like, you know, I mean, they're close to drive, and then the drive home is like 40 minutes, but the drive there is like 2 hours, like, you know.
Well, if you guys got another little bit, I think we'll put like another like 20 minutes on the show. And then I'd like to jump into a little bit of TV or movies. And then if we can close it out, since we got a couple of sports guys in here, and close it out talking about some Padres, if you guys are down.
Padres.
I'm watching a game right now. Not a Padre game, but I'm
watching. What game is a Laker game?
Laker game right
all
now.
All I winning? Talk about is Padres. So.
Yeah, are
they talking about?
Yeah, they're winning.
Okay.
Yeah, the Padres. They've been making some moves.
Exactly.
They paid that dude.
They paid him. Yep.
They paid a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Are you guys, but before that, are you guys watching anything right now? Did you guys catch the new Mandalorian episode the other day?
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, with baby, I'm watching it as it comes out. Because nice. I'm up. I think the last episode I watched at 4 a.m. Yeah, 4 a.m.
It was a little bit better this time, right?
Well,
a little more tolerable, at least.
Yeah.
Is that the second episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
What Jeff kind of alluded to is the first episode had a, I don't know how to put it, not a sloppiness to it, but like kind of like more, it felt like a filler on the opening episode, which is kind of weird. Filler should be in the middle of the season, not the beginning.
Sorry to interrupt, but maybe I will go watch episode two now that you're saying that, because I enjoyed the first two seasons and I watched the first episode and I was like, cool, Disney is trying to sell a bunch of Baby Yoda toys. And then, cool, we just threw everything from the original trilogy at a wall. And we're like, cool, yeah, let's just use all of that and throw it in. Like, that's what it felt like for me in episode one. And so I was not real excited about episode two. So I'm glad you said that.
Well, because I have a text thread with like just people that Star Wars stuff. And we all had like the thing where like, well, that happened when the episode came out. It was kind of the same thing. With the last Ant-Man movie, because Marvel's kind of in the same situation with filler and all that kind of stuff. Where like we were walking out of the movie theater and we're like, oh, did you like it? Yeah, it was okay. You know, yeah, it is what, you know, it's there kind of thing. I think that's where Mandalorian is. And it kind of not sucks for them, but they're in a tough situation because Andor happened, which I know, Jeff, we've talked about this. I don't think you fully watched it yet, but like, it's diametrically opposite from what Mandalorian is.
I was just gonna say I haven't watched Andor either yet, but I've heard nothing but high praise for it.
Yeah, but it's not what we're used to with Star Wars. Like, I'm a fan of who wrote Andor, and I'm a fan of all the actors and the story, and wrote. I'm a Rogue One fan, kind of thing. But I think it's not a straight up comparison, but it's hard to watch Mandalorian right afterwards because, like Sean said, it looks too much like a toy commercial very quickly.
Right. And yeah, I totally agree with that.
I was at the Star Wars, I think I told you, Jeff, I was at the Star Wars celebration last year, like up in Anaheim, and whatever we're talking about doesn't really matter because the rank and file of everybody loves all that stuff. Yeah. And that, you know, Disney's not dumb. Like they're in it for those Grogu toys. Kind of thing.
Oh, and not only that, because as soon as the pre-orders go on sale, I'm ordering my Babu Frig figure.
Oh yeah, yeah. You got us a Grogu baby clothes. I'm like, you know, I may have my own opinions about Baby Yoda from the show about whether I like it in a narrative sense, but I'm gonna eat it up for a children's clothes kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like it's you know. Again, like I said, like if we're trying to deconstruct it on a narrative sense and on a quality control sense, that's a totally different story. But is it entertaining? Like, am I going to watch it? Of course I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to have opinions about it. Like, I can talk about other things that I, quote unquote, don't hook me, but I still am entertained by it. My only quip is the reliance of the Clone Wars / Rebel stuff. Because I haven't watched that stuff. I haven't watched it.
And that's the Disney influence right there. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I actually, one of my last projects at Disney was working on marketing for Rebels for the Disney XD show. Yeah, I was gone for the next one, whatever it was you said, Aaron, but the Rebels. And it was like, this is great. But then it all just became so entwined. And it's awesome for somebody that's super in depth on Star Wars. Like, it's great. But when you're not even a casual fan, but between a casual fan and like super into every aspect of it, it ends up becoming a little overwhelming when you have the Rebel stuff and like now the Bad Bunch and all that's like, it's just like, okay, I got to keep up with too much stuff here.
Yeah. Well, I think, was it Mandalorian or was it Book of Buffett? I forget the blue guy, Bane, in the show.
He was in one of the live action.
I think it was Book of Boba Fett. I think so.
He
shot Timothy Oliphant. I remember that. But for me, who hasn't watched those shows for multitudes of reasons, don't have the time, whatever, that didn't mean anything to me when he showed up. But for someone who watched it, for Dave Filoni, who created the show, that meant a lot to them because they are huge fans of it, which is fine. But it's a weird watching experience where it's a homework involved. It's kind of like Marvel, I've watched
fantastic
long narrative shows. Like, don't get me wrong. If I watch The Wire season 5, I need to know some shit from season 1. Don't get me wrong, but it's weird when it's like fresh and coming in new.
Yeah, it's so wide reaching. They've definitely woven incredible webs when it comes to the Star Wars universe, but especially Marvel. Like, my head spins. I love the Marvel stuff, but my head spins because I don't know enough, you know? And so I want to understand it. And so I've hit a point when it comes to the Marvel universe movies that I'm just like, I'm just going to enjoy the story that's happening here as opposed to trying to understand everything. Cause it would make my head hurt trying to understand every aspect, like the multiverse and everything else. Like, you know?
Yeah. Like, as a Marvel kid, like, I grew up in the 90s, like, absolutely loving Marvel comic books, cards, all the, you know, like, it was just action figures, everything. Yeah. And lore was always like a big deal. Like, oh, everybody wanted to know the lore behind the characters, and you could only really find the lore either like snippets on the cards that you would get, or you would have to pony up and buy the comic books and follow along with the lore, which back then it actually was somewhat progressing the characters and stuff.
Absolutely.
At a certain point, they started putting out so much content because it got popular that it became impossible to read everything. It became impossible to keep up with everything. And you segmented everybody into their own little groups and everybody liked this character or that character. And so I think that's what's happening with the movies, is you're really starting to see like that audience get diluted. Like I'll go see a Spider-Man movie, but I'm not going to go watch another movie about Ant-Man. I just don't care enough. And like the connective tissue between the movies now feels much less ever since the events of like Infinity War and all that stuff.
Well, remember that thing that we talked about with the algorithm? They want the eyeballs and the time, right? That's kind of what they're aiming for with the synergy of it. So, I mean, Sean, you know about that.
Way too much.
Yeah, exactly. So like, that's kind of like, they're not just selling you that specific thing. They're selling you the company. Yep. Like, you know what I did the other week? You know, I watched Captain Marvel on Disney Plus, I was going to see Ant-Man. So I rewatched another Ant-Man before on Disney Plus because I have it. Like that's, I'm playing right into their hands with their planning with this kind of stuff, you know, and there is a little bit of backlash. I mean, you guys probably read all the Ant-Man stuff and that's happened in the last couple of months with the, how much money they've blah, 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 with the critic, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. There is a little bit of market saturation, but they're still dealing in such big stakes that it doesn't really affect Joe Q public.
Yeah.
I think I'm just feeling it coming on now, you know, I'm feeling that fatigue start to come in, especially with Warner Brothers starting up their new universe again. And like, when do we get to a point of where Marvel feels like they got to relaunch everything? Like, I don't know. It just seems like I'm going to have to pick and choose which movies I want to watch or which series from now on based on who I like.
Most definitely. I think Marvel is pretty more or less on the tipping point for me on that one. The only reason I go to the movies there, because I have a set of friends where that's kind of our thing that we do. Because my friend is a super Marvel fan. Like, if you talk smack about Marvel, he'll kill you. it's definitely a, you know, it's what's the term? Sunk cost fallacy, where you feel you're kind of in it already. So I kind of feel like I kind of need to watch it, not need, but like I feel like an obligation to watch it, because I'm personally, my wife knows, I'm a completionist where you have to like finish the narrative story kind of thing. Like that's why absolutely. I don't catch up on shows. I mean, we're probably gonna talk about shows eventually, but like I sometimes don't start shows because I know that it's too much of an investment, because once I start it, I have to get through it. All kind of thing.
That's Game of Thrones for me. I haven't watched a single episode because I know.
Yeah. At the very least, it's 10 episodes a season. Like, there are some, I think it was like Lost or something like that, where it's like 20 episode seasons.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah, it's the.
I could never suggest that show to anybody. Unfortunately.
So, did you watch Lost, Jeff?
Yeah. And that first season's so good.
So let me tell you, I was working at Disney when Lost was happening. So ABC, you know, we actually had a couple things that we worked on marketing wise, very ancillary because I worked on mostly kids stuff. But I remember everyone would come in like the day after and they're like, you don't watch Lost. You don't watch Lost. And this was like a couple years, and then Lost ended like that final episode. And I still don't really know what happened in it, but everybody came into my office, all these Disney employees, and they were like, fuck Lost. Like, they were so mad, and I was like, so it's good that I didn't watch Lost, huh? Like, literally. And we can say similar things about Game of Thrones.
It's the hardest show to suggest to somebody, because it's a mystery box, and if you get stuck trying to figure out what's in that mystery box, you'll get all the way to the end, and then you're not going to find out what's really in there. Not in a satisfactory way, you know? Yeah. So that's the moral of that story.
Yeah, and I feel like that show's a victim of the time frame it was released in too, because I watched it as it aired, you know, every week. I don't feel like it's a binge show. I personally feel like it's a show that the slow burn of watching it as it came out every week made it a little bit more enjoyable as a viewer, to be completely honest.
Sure. All the water cooler talk every week about this means. And yeah,
exactly. Like you said, tying into your point of it being such a mysterious show.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's fascinating. Go ahead. Tommy. No, you go ahead.
I was just going to chime in with the only show I've been watching recently, which is The Last of Us. That's really the only show I've been with.
It's great. I love it. There's a few little hiccups, a few minor hiccups here and there, but otherwise I love that show. Last of Us. We only got one episode. That's kind of disappointing to know that we only got one more episode to go, but maybe once it's done, we can get together a little panel and have a discussion on it. Cause I'd love to delve into that, especially with people that have played the game and stuff too. I know, Johnny, you have. So
yeah, I'm a huge fan of the series as a whole. So I would love to do that.
And on that same note, I'd be totally down to watch through Andor and then have some sort of discussion about that afterwards with Aaron and whoever wanted to watch it. Or
100, man. I'm down with that.
Totally.
Cool. I'll rewatch with you, actually.
Yeah, dude.
Because, you know, refresh is always a good thing.
Well, you got some time.
Yeah.
How's the game going, Aaron?
I mean, oh, the game, the Lakers won.
Oh, good.
It's over?
Yeah, they won by 10 points to the Raptors. So I'm not even if you saw me fist pumping and whatever, that's what happened.
I'm not even a big Lakers fan, but I'm cheering for them. I want to see them make the playoffs here.
Yeah, I thought you were like yelling at your wife or something.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
no.
And just to circle back, I will say to Johnny's point, it's interesting what you're saying about the slow burn of it and the water and, like Jeff, the water cooler talk. Back, about 7-8 years ago is when they really shifted, because you've noticed, like with Last of Us and there's so many shows, Mandalorian. Before, they would put the whole season on there on these streaming services. And
yeah.
I remember sitting in conference rooms because I was actually at Universal at that time, and they still owned a bunch of Hulu, and so everything was, you know, running through there. And about 2015 is when the shift went from we're going to put all the episodes on at one time versus the slow burn on new content. You know, obviously, if they pick up an older series, they throw the whole thing on there, you know, like an Office or a Friends or whatever else. But
Right. Everyone
started to realize, like all these executives were like, wait a minute, let's not just put binge shows out there. And I'm sure there's still some binge shows that are great for it, but it there's a lot to be said to that, like slow burn and the anticipation and like, okay, cool, you know, and everything else.
I completely agree. Like they're doing it with The Last of Us. It's every week. And as someone who's played through both of the games a handful of times, and I know all the major story beats, they've taken enough creative liberties where it makes sense to that the slow burn between every episode each week has been amazing. And it makes me feel like a kid again, honestly, to have a show where I'm like waiting for every Sunday at this time for the episode to air.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much to be said for that. And you're not just, I also feel like when you binge, like there's certain shows that are, you know, you're watching a 22 minute sitcom. It's like, whatever. I'm going to watch six of these before I fall asleep. But then when it's a show that you want to really retain it and understand it, like Johnny's saying, you know, and appreciate it, that anticipation and that slow burn, there's so much to be said for that. Absolutely.
How about them Padres then?
Wait. Let me give you guys one quick confession, then we'll move to the sports.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I and this isn't a crazy confession, but I find random shows like on Netflix, because what I'll do is when the kids at school, I'm usually working all day, but when I eat lunch, I'll pull up a show. So I like to have a go-to, and I'm really into, I'm not a horror guy necessarily, but I enjoy like action comedic horror, you know, Lost Boys, Underworld, that kind of stuff. So I end up finding like a lot of like werewolf vampire stuff or like Viking, you know, Norse lore stuff. And this suggestion popped up on Netflix. It's this show called The Originals. So I was like, all right, I'm going to check this out. And it's like vampires, and The Originals are like the original vampires, and there's werewolves or whatever. And they run around New Orleans. It's like a whole, you know, thing. And I get a few episodes in, and I was, and something popped up. And again, here's the, you know, probably microphones hearing me listen to, you know, watch originals, and something popped up, and it was like the Vampire Diaries. And I've never watched the Vampire Diaries, but I remember this as like a teenage drama show, maybe a la Twilight. I don't know. But apparently the show I've been watching, the originals, is a spinoff of Vampire Diaries. So it's kind of like, oh, okay. Here's 40-year-old me. Like, I'm getting into some teenage vampire shows here, but I'm still watching it. But I was like, oh, I had to confess that to my wife. I was like, oh yeah, no, this is, and she just laughed at me. I was like, oh yeah, apparently this is what I watch now.
I was just talking to Christina the other day about, and saying like, it's amazing to me that like, it's not more of an obvious thing to most people that all of television is just turned into soap operas. Like when I was young, this was just called daytime TV. And now like you have a Star Wars soap opera, and you got a Star Trek soap opera, and you just put any franchise and you add that soap opera and that cliffhanger every week, and you got them, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Even like pro wrestling. I mean, it's really always been that, but pro wrestling is it's a soap opera for men, essentially.
100%.
I mean, that's what sports is. That's what sports is.
Yeah, sports entertainment as a whole.
I mean, all that's just like just petty drama or whatever. Mm-hmm. Obviously, without the physicality of it, but like all the little intricacies of personalities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Being like a new fan of like baseball, it's weird seeing all the because it's my first introduction to like actually paying attention to the news and the marketing side of like sports. Because I said this in previous episodes, but I was just usually a fan of nachos and going to the park, so I never really paid much attention. Tony Gwynn used to come through my drive-through like every single game when I worked in Poway. So it never seemed like this crazy big thing to me. And now that I've got like season tickets and stuff, and like we get all the marketing, and yeah, you start to see there's a total like storyline being played out like a sitcom, or like a, you know, like we were just saying, like a soap opera. And you've got all these characters, and it's crazy. It just, you just throw in the mix that, you know, they're extremely talented. So, but it's crazy because a lot of them are extremely talented.
Absolutely.
And then they're also idiots. And yeah. So that mix is really crazy because you see them doing some crazy dumb stuff out there.
Well, you got one of them down there in San Diego there, Jeff.
Right.
Little Tatis. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell that guy's doing.
He's doing steroids.
Yeah, that.
No,
it's a haircut. It was a haircut.
It was athletes, but I forgot which one it was.
It's stupid.
I should say allegedly. This is being recorded.
He's coming after you, man.
Yeah, right. Hey, I mean, that's how I go out. It was meant to be.
Yeah,
that's how this podcast gets famous.
Right. Yeah, I'll fall on that sword. Yeah, no, but it's a very valid point that you make about sports entertainment as a whole. And like, you know, I used to be embarrassed about liking sports growing up because some of the people that I hung out around are just people in my area, you know, they looked at it, you're just kind of a jock or like whatever, you know, people pigeonhole people for all kinds of different things. And you know, I had some pretty nerdy friends growing up that were like into like high fantasy Dungeons and Dragons or video games, stuff like that. Nerdy stuff in air quotes. And I remember after I reached, by the time I was like 14 or 15, I reached a point where I was like, man, there's not really too much of a difference between rooting for Fernando Tatis or rooting for Boba Fett. Like it's fantasy, it's entertainment, I enjoy it. Like why should I feel shamed for enjoying it, man? If you want to go watch Harry Potter, I'm not going to shame you for that, you know.
Yeah,
100%. I mean, 100%.
If anything, obviously it's all relative and subjective, but like I feel like it, like sometimes when I'm deep into a sporting thing, like, I feel like it's like visually more embarrassing. Like when like a game's going on and I'm like,
wait, you fist pump in the middle of a podcast?
Oh no, I'm yelling at the TV. I'm like standing with my hands on my hips, like just watching the TV like this.
Oh yeah.
That sounds like my
and
house.
I'm like, I'm cursing everybody, and like I'm and I'm sitting next to my wife, and I'm like, I look like an idiot right now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Somebody, it is almost more embarrassing than being like caught playing Dungeons and Dragons or something.
Exactly. I would call it, again, it's subjective on who you're, like you alluded to with who your circle is. Like, but it seems like kind of like more vulnerable too. Like, I wouldn't do that in front of people that I don't know, kind of thing. Where I feel like a lot of D&D people would be like more open about it. But that's also an internal anxiety that everybody
I don't know has. Because I've found it to be kind of a key to the kingdom. Like, my first time getting into baseball, like, maybe it's because the city is starting to win for the first time in a long time. But we would go out to dinner and stuff, and Christina and I sitting at the table, we'll cheer, and you'll get cheers from other tables too, watching the game. And it, you know, people, I don't know, it's this nice communal thing. And I think Dungeons and Dragons or video games or any of that stuff is the same. Like, I think it's just a communal experience. And the only reason that you would put it down is because your other community doesn't necessarily approve of that community for whatever reason, right?
Fun anecdote about sports fans or Padre fans specifically, they don't tip.
Stay classy, San Diego.
Again, conjecture. It's a small sample size. My wife used to work for a coffee shop that was owned by a famous Padre player. I won't say his name because whatever. He just got paid last year.
Throw it out there. Got it.
He's from East County.
Hassan Kim. It's obviously Hassan.
Yeah,
Kim.
You Darvish. Come on. Anyways, so he did something very nice for the Padres last season, right? Very big thing for Padres. The shop got inundated with Padres fans. They all came up, ordered 50 drinks and whatever, and just no tip. But they all came from like Carlsbad and went all the way to Alpine.
Oh, wow.
Just to be Padres fans, which is, to Jeff's point, like, San Diego's excited because we haven't won anything anytime. Like,
ever.
Sean, we all remember this, like when the Chargers were hot for a minute in 03, 04, 06, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
blah,
well, like, in 94. Remember, you and I were hanging out for that Super Bowl.
Yeah, but like San Diego, like they like to win, but like when they lose, they kind of like dissipates in the background kind of thing. But it's the same thing with the Padres in 98. Like, I remember that. Yep. That's the reason we have Petco.
Yep, absolutely. There's definitely a fair weather fan aspect to San Diego fans. And I see that up here in L.A. too, but...
Well, L.A. got a lot of transplants, I'm assuming.
See, and like, that's the other thing with L.A. Like, you go to... If Dodgers are playing... Dodgers a little less, but especially the Angels, because Angels don't have quite the fan base. You go down there when they're playing the Red Sox or the Yankees or, you know, kind of a blue blood baseball team, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
It's more than half Red Sox, Yankees fans.
Dude, when I lived in L.A., like East County Laker fans and Laker fans when I lived in Hollywood, two totally different vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Because like when I lived in Whittier when the Lakers won in 2010, that was a definite vibe. Like, cars were lit on fire kind of thing. That's some Philadelphia shit right there. Yeah. But you're not going to see that in downtown because of people are Laker fans for different reasons kind of thing. San Diego is a little bit of that, not too much, but I think it's more of the stereotype where San Diego has more like going on, so to speak, more something to be invested for. Like in other towns, that's kind
we'll
of
burn down. All... Yeah. We'll burn down East County.
Shit. I mean, they should, I mean, but the thing is, like, I don't think
just
they,
because,
they
have, just because
I live there now, I can say that. No, I think it's more of, not that we have more to do, but it's like, it's not part of this identity of being a San Diegan. Like when, like my friend who's from Philadelphia, his identity is the sports teams, the Phillies, the 76ers, the Flyers. Like that's his identity growing up. Like it's hard for someone growing up in San Diego to be their identity to be a Padre fan. I do know them, and there are them like that, but on mass, they're not like that.
It's a peripheral thing for the most part, just because of what you guys were saying about the transplant thing. Because it's such a military city, these people come that in too. From all different states where they're way more passionate about baseball. And then, you get a stadium full of fans from a different team. It's really kind of awkward, but fun, it definitely makes for a fun setting.
Oh, no, like, go to a Petco Park, like people still cheer, and they're just as hardcore fans as they are anywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
But it's easier for us to, like, not get tore up when they're losing. I guess that's kind of the easy thing to do. Like, whenever the Lakers lose, I'm going to be mad, but I'm not that mad. I know people, when their team loses, they're apoplectic for a long time.
I have family that lives in Nebraska, and they're like that about college football.
Yeah.
It's not even
go Cornhuskers.
Yeah, man. It's hardcore. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely much more hardcore when you get to those towns that are like college football towns, because they got
hard corn.
Like Nebraska is corn and college football. Whereas San Diego, LA, like all of California, really, like Johnny, even up north, like there's so many other things to do, and you have a passionate fan base. But when that's all there is to do is go watch college football, on a Saturday, like they're just rabid about it. And then it's funny. I wonder the dichotomy of big cities too, because like Aaron was saying, a Philly fan, like Philadelphia fans are utterly insufferable at times. You know what I mean? And that is still a big city, but they just have such an identity tied to their sports teams.
Yeah, and that's the reputation they have. People call them Philly scumbags.
Yeah,
they're known for being that way for all the sports, whether it's the Eagles, the Phillies, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even who's growing
that? Up. Sorry. There was a comedian. I'm terrible with names, but the comedian that just went up in Philly and spent like 35 minutes just ripping the city apart.
Oh, like, I know what you're talking about. That's Bill Burr. And he's like the biggest celebrity I have is Rocky. He's a fictional character.
That's a little bit of glass house there, because Bill Burr is a Boston guy. I know a lot of Boston people, and they get a little wild about their sports.
They're sensitive about things, but like I think the most sensitive fans that I know are Philly fans. But I think what we've all kind of touched on is like it's an identity thing. Mm-hmm. Like their identity is, not just being a fan of those teams, but that team losing, that team winning. Like you, Sean, to the thing that you just talked about for Boston, for the longest time up until 2004 or three, or forgot which year it was.
Yeah.
Like
four.
Their identity was the Red Sox losing, right? Mm-hmm. And then they started winning, and then their identity is winning. And then Boston Celtics, I'm biased, but their identity is the same kind of vibe, but their identity is being the city of champions, which is debatable in the last 35 years. But like it's all about the identity of it, kind of thing. Like the same thing with the Lakers or the Padres, because the identity is not linked with the Padres. But when the fan has like linked their personality to it, that's when it starts affecting them viscerally. Yeah. And that's why people climb up poles and flip cop cars and blah blah.
Even if they lose,
Win
or lose, cop cars are getting flipped.
I feel like the closest thing we have to that in California for pretty much all of California is probably like Raiders fans.
Yeah.
I feel like Raiders fans get their identity tied in the most to that team.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a city thing because of Oakland, LA. Jeff, you know this, and I know your in-laws, like, it wasn't really tied. I mean, it was kind of an Hispanic thing a little bit, but because the Raiders have that part of their vibe for decades.
It's it's also the same reason that you still have Charger fans here in San Diego, right? Like when you go from city to city, you carry a following from that city. Yeah. So like you're a fan of the Oakland Raiders, or maybe you're a fan of the LA Raiders. Like I am now following the Las Vegas Raiders because that's just what my family does. So
yeah, you got Chris, you got to follow the wife on that one.
No questioning that.
No.
I want to thank you guys for coming out on an impromptu episode and chilling out in the late evening. The space pug.
Oh yeah,
there you go. She's obviously tired. It's obviously bedtime. So, oh look at that. That's crazy looking.
Did you see my cool pug emojis on Discord that I pulled from a different one?
I didn't get those.
So that's Dwight. That is the Bite Me Bambi pug, and I have, I don't know where they are. They made some Dwight bucks with. I'll have to give you a couple, Jeff, because it looks just like Rebel.
And I love pug stuff.
It's like pug face in the middle, and it's $100 fake $100 bill. Yeah,
so awesome, I'll have to get you some of those. That'd be great. I'll frame it for sure.
No, totally. I have a bunch around. I gotta find them. They're somewhere in the studio. My wife takes over the studio for the week, and then I lose everything. I don't know where anything is.
All right, guys. Well, you guys have a good evening. I'd like to get everybody back on for different things, and we'll plan on, you know, doing some of those reviews and stuff like that, or not reviews, but just like talks about the series and stuff. I think that'd be fun. I'll just keep in touch on the Discord and all that good stuff. And
I'm free a lot of evenings, depending on shooting shows and stuff. Sundays during the day are just tough because of go tell to the wall, but we'll just be in touch.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm roll the dice with me.
Of course.
You have a 2-week old, Aaron. Everything is a roll of the dice when you have a child that age. Yeah. Like, that's just how it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
It ended up being a fussy time at 1 p.m. this afternoon.
Yeah. So you never know. That's true.
So I guess my fussy time was then too.
I gotta go feed the guy right now, actually. He's so sleepy.
My fussy time was like 10:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And then I took a nap and I was like, I'm good.
If we don't go, we can't come back. That's what they say.
Right.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. You have a good evening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon.
Good chat, fellas.